Support for the Media Project comes from the College of St. Rose, Albany, New York, offering a new Bachelor of Science degree in public health with a focus on social, physical, and behavioral sciences. strose.edu. From Northeast Public Radio, this is the Media Project, a weekly discussion about issues confronting the media.
Oh, newspapermen meet such interesting people. They know the lowdown, now it can be told. I'll tell you quite reliably off the record about some charming people I have known. For I meet politicians and grafters by the score, killers plain and fancy, it's really quite a bore. Oh, newspapermen meet such interesting people. They wallow in corruption, crime, and gore. Ting-a-ling-ling, city desk, pull the press, extra, extra, read all about it, it's a mess, meets the test. Oh, newspapermen meet such interesting people. It's wonderful to represent the press.
Here on the Media Project, we have some interesting statistics to report to you and some analysis, commentary, and if we're lucky, even a little insight into the media issues of the day. I'm Rex Smith, editor of the Times Union, here with my colleague Judy Patrick, editor of the Daily Gazette in Schenectady.
I am always glad to be here with you and with Ms. Dr. Shartok.
With Dr. Yeah, Mr. Almost Shartok, yeah. Dr. Shartok.
And the 2,000-year-old man, it's not doctor. It's Daka
Shatak, who is the CEO of Northeast Public Radio, columnist, commentator. Here's the amazing fact that Judy is pointing out to us today. This is from Nieman Lab, which is research into journalism at Harvard. There are now more Americans working for online publishers and broadcasters than for newspapers, according to data from the U.S. Bureau of Labor Statistics. Employment at online outlets first eclipsed newspapers, it turns out, last October. About 198,000 people working in internet publishing and broadcasting compared to just over 183,000 working for newspapers. So that is saying internet broadcasting, not just broadcasting in general, but internet publishing, that is internet in general, is now bigger than newspapering. So
I don't get it fully. So, some guy runs a little online thing. Does that mean that gets counted in that stat?
Well, that would get counted, but so would big things like Huffington Post and digital pure plays that are getting a lot of money from foundations and as well as from subscribers.
So I have a question for Judy Patrick, our wonderful panelist. Judy, here's my question to you. I know you saw this piece and that you sent it out to everybody on your staff.
I did.
Why did you do that?
You know, I did in part it wasn't a surprise to me, but it was because it made me think back to a time when every town had its own newspaper and newspapers were the source of information. And although we're all past that and we know there are a lot more ways to get information out nowadays, it was like a historic moment for me, believe it or not.
Yeah, but obviously if you send it to the staff, you wanted them to see it for a reason. And the reason was that you wanted to motivate them somehow?
I did, and I want to underscore the fact that things are changing. We all need to recognize it and keep pace with it. And also, even though this is a statistic about where people work, in our newspaper and in every newspaper nowadays, we are also having people who are dedicated solely to online. And so I think the statistic is going to have to change.
We're all becoming one thing. Merging together. And
right, including radio. I mean, we have a huge presence, online presence, but nothing like yours, Rex. I mean,
huge, somebody would say.
Yeah, but I wanted to ask you this. So are you having trouble, when you say you want to motivate them, are the two of you having trouble convincing your people that they have to pay more attention to the digital side?
It's not that they don't want to, I think. It's finding enough hours in the day to make everything happen. I'll just give you an example. We have pending, about to be published by the time people hear this, that a big project run in print, it'll probably be 5 days. And this was supposed to start a few days earlier, but we took a look at what was prepared and there really wasn't a significant enough digital presence. We haven't yet learned that, even though we all talk about this, that we need to be doing the digital from the get-go. If you've got an investigative project or something big going on, you need to be working on video and digital graphics from the beginning. So I stopped it, and we are now trying to catch up and have it ready so that this will be a multimedia presentation. And it's not that the journalists involved in this wouldn't want to do that. It's just that, wow, we get busy doing reporting and writing. Imagine that. And there just isn't as much time in the day as you should.
Wasn't it C. Northcote Parkinson who said, not A.J. Parkinson, who is somebody that the governor, Governor Cuomo made up, but C. Northcote Parkinson, did he say that projects expand to the time that you have to do them and something like that? So, you know, I think the reason you guys are so, it's so important to let your people know how important this is so that somehow within that circle of time they have, this becomes something that they do, right?
You know, journalists nowadays are under such pressure. It is so much different than it was when we started. We used to just have to go out with a piece with a pad and a pen and take notes and write a story. Mm-hmm. And at 11 or 12 o'clock, the presses would start up. Nowadays, these guys are doing podcasts, taking photographs, tweeting, posting to their Facebook accounts, thinking about databases, thinking about ways to make data visualizations, and at the same time, tweeting real-time news. You guys are doing it here at the radio station as well.
And I was going to tell you, Judy, that as I do my Capital Connection show with some person, mm-hmm. a journalist or somebody else, Ian Pickus sits in the chair running the board. He's our news director, but he's in his 20s. And he tweets. As mm-hmm. I'm speaking, real time. Mm-hmm. Now, the truth of the matter is, here I am, a 75-year-old, or just about to be. I should be tweeting what you guys are saying on the Media Project.
I should be tweeting right now, but I cannot think and tweet at the same time.
Yeah.
Most people can. You look at Donald Trump. But, you know, the fact is, this would not be a problem if newspapers had the revenue they used to have. We would just hire more people. We would hire more somebody who would follow around the reporter and tweet as the reporter is doing something. Or you would hire more videographers.
Or people under 30.
Well, yeah, we can do that. But
So what we have to do is make hard decisions about what we should not be doing anymore. So we give the reporters more time to do the things that they should be doing.
For example,
maybe we don't cover the sewer commission meetings. Maybe we don't cover the zoning commission meetings. My newspaper has a long tradition of doing that kind of day-by-day reporting. And so how many people are reading the sewer commission stories? We'll do the sewer story.
In other words, right now you just let them smell it for themselves.
Right. We'll do a big breakout story if they're talking about putting a line around a lake, which would foster development. But we're not going to do the story anymore about a planning meeting to schedule a public hearing to consider a master plan.
The hard part about that is that the reporters actually want to go to all those little things because they pick up stories. They get to know sources. And you can convince yourself if you're a reporter, as I did when I was a reporter, that you're doing your job if you're covering every little jot and tittle of something, whereas you really ought to be looking for the bigger story. That's what you should have been doing 20 years ago, and now you need to be doing multimedia at the same time. So everybody's trying to figure it out. And the big sites, the big players, like the New York Times, for example, are able to draw advertising for their digital products to support the work. But here's the problem. Now there are these ad blockers that are coming along that are stopping because nobody likes to have ads taking over their screens.
And well, that's great. I love this.
If you don't have the ads, of course, you don't support the journalism.
And you don't get paid.
So now the CEO of the New York Times, who used to run BBC, Mark Thompson was quoted this week as saying that really people who block ads shouldn't have any right to consume the journalism that would be supported by those ads.
Oh, now, how do you get that to happen? So you can have anti-ad blocker blockers.
Yes. Anti-ad blocker blockers. Or the Times is considering actually a super high tier in which people would pay even more than more for their subscription and get no ads.
Well, as my mother used to say about going to Patricia Murphy's, they're all doing it now. So the problem, of course, is that as you go to a higher tier, you know, there are going to be more and more higher tiers. Now, and Pandora, I pay for no advertising. You can get it with advertising, or you can pay for it without advertising.
Patricia Murphy's. What was Patricia Murphy's this year?
Oh, it was a very upscale, doily-laden restaurant. For those of us of a certain age,
really?
Our mothers dragged us there, and they had white swans outside in the pond.
Patricia,
I remember that.
Murphy's.
It was very genteel.
I was thinking of Patsy's, the place Sinatra loved.
Of which my mother said, they're all doing it now. I said, why do we have to go here? They're all doing it now.
So this reminds me a little bit of the satellite radio model or the early HBO model, but then you did get some ads creeping in there. But we often think about whether or not to go with this kind of an approach. But we also have to keep in mind that what we do is disseminate news to everybody. And are we outpricing poor people? We want to make sure that people who can't afford $100 a year for news are still able to access really important news about their community.
Well, I don't want to give you a hard time, Judy, ever.
Go ahead.
But I do remember that you were pretty early into making people pay to come to the Gazette.
Right, but not a premium price. And we've always paid. I mean, we've never given away a newspaper for free when we printed it. It's always, but newspapers back in the day were 2 or 3 cents. As recently as 5 years ago, I think we were 50 cents. Still, even today, the newspaper is the best bargain in town. Costs less than a cup of coffee, far less than many lottery tickets. Still a great deal. I'm just concerned about going too high and outpricing the average person or the poor, especially
now,
the poor people.
With you as the editor, the Lois Lane of the editor.
Perry White.
Perry White. Yeah, thank you.
I didn't want to use a male model. So do you sit with the business types, the publisher and others, when this pricing business is...
We do. Yeah. I do. Sure, we discuss it all the time.
We discuss it, you know, and it's actually, we all have this concern about what's the right price point, because what you charge for the paper doesn't come close to paying for it, of course. And as advertising diminishes, newspapers are trying to get more money from their circulation, from their sales. But boy, Judy's point is really well taken. What about that small D democratic responsibility that you have to reach the community, the community?
Very nice. But I did want to say that I don't fully understand one thing, and I've raised this before. It seems to me that as digital takes over, fewer people are buying the print product, right?
Correct.
Why wouldn't the price of newsprint be going down? Because you're buying less of it, therefore there's not as much of a competition.
Well, newsprint is down from last year, but it's not a big part of the cost of your daily newspaper.
Right. And as the price goes down, actually, there's great fluidity in the newsprint production industry. And so the mills are going offline. And then
what does that mean, offline?
That means they're shutting down the mills. You don't produce as much newsprint. And actually, the concern, if you take a step back and take a look 10 years out, the supply chain becomes a concern. What if you don't have people producing the plates for your press, if there's so few presses? What if there isn't enough newsprint being produced because it just isn't profitable enough?
And is monopoly an issue? In other words, are fewer people controlling the newsprint? That's the paper. Newsprint industry?
It is fairly integrated. Yes, that is a concern. And also for smaller publishers, Judy's paper is independent. I think there's a concern that the prices are higher for independents than they are for groups like mine, because we negotiate group contracts for all the newspapers around the country.
Sure.
That's yet another factor that is mitigating against the smaller properties.
Now, do you, as competitors, know what the other guy is paying for their newsprint?
I don't know.
Do you know? It's not open
record.
That's
something probably Rex and I care a great deal about.
Right. Well, the reason I raise it, of course, is because I'm interested and because this is the media project and because I think people are out there who are interested in how newspapers survive. Will they survive? And can they afford to pay their bills?
You know, a few years ago, the price was really high. And that was one of the reasons you saw the newspapers shrink. They got more narrow. They got shorter. And we were saving significant dollars every year just by shrinking the paper. Mm-hmm. We also told people it was easier to hold.
which is true, which I is suppose. True. But if you're really going to get, if you make it the size of a book, it'd be really efficient.
Sounds like me, though, when you say that, you know, shrinking and shorter.
These things happen. The Media Project, media@wamc.org is how you reach us. Judy Patrick, Alan Shartok, and I'm Rex Smith here with you. You know, as we talk about advertising, by the way, here's one of these interesting ethical concerns. Should a publisher turn down advertising from advertisers it doesn't like?
Yes.
Now, you have this question about underwriting. You know, you won't accept underwriting from certain kinds of things.
Correct.
Okay, so you think that it's a...
And that went all the way to the Supreme Court of the United States because the KKK tried to buy underwriting on the St. Louis public radio station, and they claimed that since they got federal money, they had no right to turn anybody down. The Supreme Court of the United States said, yes, they do. And I say, thank God.
Very interesting. All right. Now, what about this? BuzzFeed, which is a very popular digital site now. BuzzFeed turned down a $1.3 million deal. So that's nothing to sneeze at.
That's not chicken.
With the Republican National Committee. And they did it because BuzzFeed says Donald Trump is, quote, directly opposed to the freedoms of our employees in the United States. So what do you think about that, about a media outfit shutting out a political advertiser because they don't like what the advertiser's saying? Couching it in those terms, does that change your view at all?
Oh, you're talking to me?
Well, sure.
You know, I like freedom of action. I like freedom of speech. I like the idea that if you own a company, that you can say no. I know that there are certainly people that the radio stations, the 29 stations I run, would say no to if they came on.
But I think people would accuse you of being partisan in that respect.
Yeah, so? Yeah. Tough darts. tough nuggies.
Yeah, and it is a publisher's prerogative to decide what right. advertisers to accept. And, but it is a difficult decision whenever you turn someone away. I think we had a hard talk at our place when we were considering ads from gentlemen's clubs or strip joints.
And what did you decide?
We ultimately decided to run them. That it was a legal business.
It's legal.
Sure.
So yeah.
We had that at my little academic place, the Legislative Gazette, which covers state government, and there was that very same issue. Should we take the ads for the gentlemen's clubs, you know, the strip joints? And the answer was, I think I remember, it was a number of years ago, no,
yeah.
And then changed to yes, just like
really? Yeah, a I student publication so. Owned by the State University of New York, taking ads from strip clubs. That's pretty that, good. Yeah, I think we could make, right. I wish I'd known about that. We would have made a story out of it, you know?
that's why I try not to talk to you.
Chartok defended the decision, saying, yeah, it's perfectly legal for women to take off their clothes. And I don't know. It doesn't sound like such a great idea.
Well, come on now, Rex. Women have been taking off their clothes since they were in the caves.
I didn't finish my sentence. No. Anyway,
but I think in this campaign, I think my newspaper would have a responsibility, if we're going to accept Hillary Clinton ads, to accept Donald Trump ads.
Yeah, well, I mean, don't right. you think that BuzzFeed is now going to be mistrusted by Trump supporters? They'll say, hey,
don't you,
you know,
think they're saying we don't care? You know, I think wasn't Univision, when Trump had bad things to say about Hispanics, they were turned down.
Yeah. And actually, NBC canceled its commitment to broadcast the Miss Universe pageant when Trump was, isn't that right, as a result of his actions.
I mean, didn't have a lot of clothes on there either.
And so these are all business decisions. Hopefully they're not affecting the editorial decisions of what BuzzFeed covers in its
well, what do you
newsfeed.
Think?
It puts the BuzzFeed journalists in a really tough position.
And under a microscope, right?
And yeah, yeah. No, definitely so.
But, you know, it's interesting, Trump, when he was under pressure for his negative comments about the judge, he said...
I'm sorry, Rex, just so everybody
well,
remembers.
Well, everybody understands if he's listening
no, not
to this
everybody
show.
Does.
Well,
not
anybody listening
does.
To this show, okay, so go ahead, Alan, tell us the whole story.
Well, it's not much of a story. It's that Trump said that because the judge had a Mexican ancestry... And he couldn't be fair in Trump's trial over, you know, his Trump University. And it turns out, of course, that the judge was an American citizen, that he was born in this country.
In Indiana.
In Indiana. Nevertheless, he did come from a Mexican
But I
family.
Don't think Donald Trump used the word ancestor. I think I heard him say he's a Mexican.
He's Mexican, yeah. He's Mexican, which is, you know, close enough for
okay,
him.
So if you and said, so, I was going to say, Chartok is a Jew, would that be he wasn't born in this country and he's a Jew?
No, that's not what that word means. But I do think that if he would say, Chartok can't be fair... As a journalist, because he's a Jew.
Yeah, that would be wrong.
That would be, you know, problematic, especially since he has a Jewish son-in-law. But he doesn't have a Mexican son-in-law, so I guess it's okay for him to be biased against people of Hispanic descent. So Trump then told his supporters to attack journalists who ask questions about it. He said, you know, the people asking the questions, those are the racists. I would go at them. And so, you know.
What do you mean attack? I mean, attack can mean punch him in the nose, and attack can mean answer back.
Well, that hasn't happened, although, to my knowledge, nobody except Trump's campaign manager has actually physically done anything to a journalist. People being angry at journalists is not new. Look, Bernie Sanders supporters, a number of them, made hugely aggressive, derogatory comments and started attacking verbally and online and threatening Associated Press reporters when the Associated Press reported that Hillary Clinton had gone over the threshold to be considered the presumptive nominee. And a lot of Sanders supporters started going after the AP. And then subsequently, after New York Times, the AP felt it necessary then to put out a memo to staff basically telling them to watch their backs, to be careful, because they were worried that these really ticked off Sanders supporters could, frankly, attack journalists.
That kind of thing does happen. People get all worked up.
Yeah.
And they do things that, through the rearview mirror, they will end up wishing they hadn't done.
The notion, and I got a letter to me because we carry Associated Press content accusing us of being in league with Hillary.
Of course.
Although, of course, Hillary didn't wish to have herself declared the winner the day that she was declared that by the AP. It was it made the wins the next day in the primaries anticlimactic.
Well, but it was a good decision by AP for one reason, good business. You know, they were out in front of everybody, and they got an awful lot of publicity.
You could think of it that way as business, but it was actually journalism, you know? They were reporting the news, and so that's kind of their job.
You can't make the news to be something just because somebody wants it to be that.
Yeah.
Well, that's true, but they made the news. There were others who didn't do it, Judy, right? So in other words, they took a look at the stats, and they said, okay, Hillary is now over the top. The Bernie people were all yelling at the top of their lungs, no, they're not, because we're going to turn around all of those superdelegates who are there.
Well, I think they did more than look at the stats. I think they talked to all the superdelegates.
Right.
And that's real journalism.
Yeah. They interviewed, they counted one by one. Who do you support? Who do you support?
But it didn't stop the Bernie people from saying whatever they want to say.
Yeah. Yeah, exactly.
I hate to be self-serving here, too, but when it comes to being journalism, I mean, where are the presidential, where's Donald Trump especially about talking about the importance of journalism in our democracy? And I'm not hearing any of that. I'm just hearing, the word attack
kidding?
Is such a strong word.
Are you kidding? He's climbing on your shoulders, and he is saying, we know people hate the press, and therefore go at them.
Yeah.
And vote for me. That's what it's all about.
Yeah, yeah, that's true.
And this is not a civics class. This is not one of Rex's. civics program.
But a presidential campaign should be part civics class, is what I'm arguing. But it's not that at all. It's a lesson, but it's not a lesson in civics.
As I've always said, should be, should be, but it's not. That's not what's motivating Donald Trump.
You know, one of the questions that Jake Tapper of CNN raised was reporters interviewing Secretary Clinton at the moment of her ascension to presumptive nominee, giving her such softball questions that were, he referred them as sniveling, I believe, ridiculously sycophantic questions such as, Secretary Clinton, is it setting in that you might be making some serious history here tomorrow? You know, that kind of question.
Yeah, but it was a good question because she would be the first woman to run for president, on a major party ticket, right? So it's still a good, you're sneering.
Yeah,
right?
I don't know.
No, you don't think so?
Well, I don't think, I mean.
It's softball, all right, but I think it's productive. I saw lots of headlines which referred to it.
Yes, but, you know, to ask, when you have an opportunity to ask a reporter, a candidate a question, a candidate who doesn't conduct big press conferences, Secretary Clinton does not do that.
You know, last weekend I watched the movie Suffragette. It reminded me, it wasn't that long ago that women couldn't even vote. And this was a historic moment. And I thought it had gotten eclipsed by the Trump debate over the use of the word Mexican in his challenge of the judge. I think the newspapers gave it the due it deserved, but I think some of this was justified.
Mm-hmm. Although a lot of
I think we needed to take a moment and talk and look, review history. How many people have run for president on a major? None. How many women have ever run on minor parties? Let's talk about that.
I agree with
Let's
you.
Talk about the fact that in our lifetimes, in many of women weren't allowed to vote, and the struggle to get the vote was very difficult. And there are issues that women continue to face today. It's not like everything's hunky dory at this point.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, and so it was appropriate to stop and give that some particular coverage. But
not to ask a sniveling question.
Right, not to ask a sniveling question. But even so, Donald Trump's power to dominate the media landscape was such that cable news in particular was still talking about the Mexican judge, quote unquote, at the time that Hillary was making this historic moment.
Just so we'll all remember, it's very Trump-esque.
Yeah.
What he is doing is he's finding out institutions and people who are not popular with his group of people, potential voters, like Mexicans, like Muslims, like journalists. And he's going to stand on their shoulders.
One quick moment of here, David Gilkey, the NPR photographer who died in a grenade attack while covering Afghanistan. Worth making note of here, how many people alongside he was Zabihullah Tanama, who was his translator. People who work hard to bring the news to you, notwithstanding the grave public dangers, and we pay tribute to these people.
Mm-hmm.
Okay, thank you all for joining us on The Media Project. Judy Patrick, Alan Chartok, I'm Rex Smith. We'll hope to see you next week here.
Thanks for showing up, Rex.
They claim to represent the common people. It's funny, Wall Street never has complained. Ah, but publishers have worries, for publishers must go to working folks for readers and to big shots for their dough. Now publishers are such interesting people. It could be prostitution, I don't know. Ting-a-ling-a-ling, circulation, ting-a-ling-a-ling, advertising, get those readers, get that payoff. What a headache, what a mess. Oh, publishers are such interesting people. Let's give three cheers for freedom of the press.